papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project gives you a half hour of commentary and analysis on what's going on in news media this week, and we're going to have a very interesting program. I'm Rex Smith here, formerly editor of the Times Union, now doing the Upstate American. I'm here with my colleagues Barbara Lombardo and Mike Spain and Miles Reed. Barbara, the former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. Mike Spain, longtime associate editor of the Times Union, and Miles Reed, the editor now of the Gazette of Schenectady. Hi, y'all.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening,
good
whatever
day.
It is.
Whatever you may find. You know, we're at a remarkable time here, and I think that our program will largely focus on this issue. And that is something we've talked about off and on, of course, for weeks now. But we are really at a friction point, I think, in the assault of the executive branch of the U.S. government on the right to free speech in America as pursued by the media. Donald Trump this week called for CBS to lose its broadcast license, saying that it will pay a big price because of what it aired on 60 Minutes. He already is suing 60 Minutes on a previous broadcast. Despite a court order, the White House is continuing to bar the Associated Press from Oval Office events. Caitlin Collins of CNN asked a question in the White House, and the president immediately accused CNN of hating our country and says, nobody watches you anymore. An amazing assault on the independent media. The White House now has asked Congress to claw back funding from NPR and PBS, basically to take back money that's already appropriated and then eliminate going forward the $1.60 a year in taxpayer benefits. That is, the average taxpayer puts in $1.60 a year to support public broadcasting. So that is sort of the lay of the land of where we are in this environment. And I wonder then if our conversation today might focus a bit on how we get out of this predicament, how we who are putting out journalism regularly, who try to be fair and balanced, let's say, fair in our presentation of the news, can cover all of this, and how we go about covering a political environment in which almost half the country seems to be hostile to the First Amendment, to the independence of the press, and to truth-telling. So there's an easy question. What are you going to do?
I think it's just it's hit a level now where we have to actually stay strong. Every week seems like it's a month or a year, and I've seen an amplified or increased criticism and question just about everything we do, not just from the right, but also from the left. It has created an environment where I think people are saying, if you as local media do something that is critical of me or scrutinizes what I'm doing, I'm going to actually just shoot the messenger. I'm going to accuse the messenger. I'm going to try to erode trust in it. It's not totally new, but it's at a level that I've certainly never seen in 35 years. And, you know, I think at this point, it's really important for us to stay strong, keep doing the work we're doing, but also support our colleagues like Caitlin Collins and CNN and say, we don't hate the country. I don't hate the country, you know, to fight back and make sure that we're unified as much as possible.
Mike, for many years, you took a lot of calls at the Times Union. You were the public face who people called to complain about the Times Union. Is this different?
It seems more intense. It seems like a concerted effort to undermine our credibility. And that seems to be the goal. And one of the ways you do that is you attack. I mean, President Trump said in his first term that the media was the enemy of the people. I mean, that's a preposterous notion. It has been a friend of democracy, a promoter of democracy, a savior of democracy throughout our country's history. But now you see the rise of these alternate fringe media given center stage and given the same seats right next to the established media that has already demonstrated through its performance over decades and even longer in the case of the Associated Press as a reliable presentation of the facts and the news that you can trust. and that gets undermined, and people don't have that appreciation of, I guess I'm looking for the word, but the appreciation of authenticity that we used to attribute to mainstream media in the past, you know, the conventional New York Times, ABC, NBC, CBS, the Washington Post, and then the Associated Press, which would appear in every other newspaper in the country.
I'm sad to say very pessimistic about what is happening. I want to see what Miles is suggesting happening around the country, where the media need to speak up and be strong and not cow and stick together. An example of where maybe they could have stuck together was when Caitlin Collins is asking a question that people should have been wondering, like, why doesn't somebody just ask the president, are you going to get that guy out of prison, out of El Salvador?
That was her question.
That was her question. The obvious question that, and there was an opportunity to ask the president of the United States, what are you doing about it? And instead he scoffs, he doesn't answer, he switches, right, calls us unpatriotic, us in the media. And you don't hear follow-up questions from every other, there should have been a Spartacus moment there where every other legitimate news outlet should have been asking the same question. And we can't let ourselves get distracted. You called it a remarkable time, and I guess it is a remarkable time that we're in, Rex, but it's a horrifying time. And the assault on free speech goes beyond the media to just ordinary people who are being arrested for free speech.
I like your statement of the Spartacus moment. That's a really interesting term of what really is needed here. And when you consider actually the peril of the drop down, the peril to the local media that comes from this infecting people of the country, as Miles alluded to, you know, Barbara, you're the editor of a small community newspaper where, notwithstanding whatever coverage you did in your community, there was sort of an assumption that you were of the community. You were one of them, right? And that might have been lost by this time.
I think that it's been lost for a couple of reasons. And there definitely would be people who would feel, you know, was the paper too liberal? Occasionally, as Miles saying, then there are people who would say that we were being too conservative. But we were part of the community, and people cared, and people would interact with us and use us as the vehicle for their opinions. And now what's happened in Saratoga and in other small communities, that it doesn't have the media doesn't have the local presence, so they become less relevant to the people to get the word out. So that's a danger. And heavy reliance on Associated Press, which is now having its own troubles trying to have access to news.
I am pessimistic like Barb about this too, but there's something I'm trying to keep in mind to, you know, talking to my staff about, is that it is not totally unique, this very aggressive attack the messenger. And the things that I think about, even in our market, is I remember early on with the Roman Catholic Diocese scandals, for years tried to document that. And those were hard stories to get because the individuals were afraid. Sometimes the victims were afraid to talk, or they had questionable pasts. The diocese at the time, for years, was very aggressive, and they would browbeat us. They would say, if you do that story, you're going to regret it. They were very, I think, effective for a long time at getting us to hold off. And over time, I think we and the Times Union and the Saratogian and some other papers were able to go far enough. And now we look back, and I think it's pretty clear there was widespread abuse. But that was a hard one to get. A similar thing happened with the Andrew Cuomo administration. They were very aggressive. And that was a fairly new thing, I think, in this market, where if you were going to do a story that in any way questioned something that the state was doing, you know, Governor Cuomo had people that were going to call up the editor and try to talk them out of doing the story. Not the first time it had ever happened, but it became more aggressive. So I think Trump is taking that playbook and just amplifying it and taking it to the extreme. But we have seen this before.
Yeah, I think the press has always had an on and off adversarial role with the people in power. I agree. And at the same time, though, what seems different, even when we were sort of adversaries, we still had access to those people, and they still had access to us, and we would get the call back when we wanted their comment, and they would reach out to us even when they were angry at us to get their story out. And there was a legitimate and, you know, I think a reasonable and a fair exchange during that time. Now, it seems like, you know, we are being attacked from all sides. And as Barb was pointing out, this is coming at a time when we don't have the resources that we once had because of the change in dynamic and the model of newspapering and radio and television are all under duress. And we can't fight back with as much force in the courts, perhaps.
Even when you are fighting back in the courts, one of the huge differences right now is that you have an administration that can be told anything by the courts, and they say, make me. Go ahead and make me. They have already proven that they're doing that. And so how do we fight against that? How does anybody fight against that unless it's turning over the 5 or 6 people in Congress that the Democrats would need from the Republican side to take action against the president?
Yeah, that's a tough thing. But it is difficult, too, because we don't have any more a sort of unified audience that is getting the same message. Fox News, which I think is the greatest detriment to America's constitutional order, frankly, that we've had. Fox News created this notion of an overtly biased report, which intentionally distorts what it's reporting, not just in its commentary, like the opinion pages of a newspaper. The commentators at night on Fox News are biased, but even in its news report, you know, the stories that they don't cover, the sins of omission in the scriptural sense, the stories that are true that they don't have, and the stories they distort. Even the news report of Fox is bad. And then there are all these other players that are now getting access to the White House that are not even independent media outlets. Newsletters of the Heritage Foundation, for example, are now taking the place of the Associated Press and the press pool briefings in the White House. This kind of thing is pervasive so that even when we have a good argument that there is a repression of the right to free speech, that is not being heard by almost half the American population because they're getting it from a distorted source.
And that reminds me where Sarah Palin, the former vice presidential candidate, had sued, was it the New York Times?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For what I have to admit as an editor and as a person was a regrettable lack of judgment in what they printed. It was wrong.
It was an error.
It was an error.
In an editorial, it was a factual error.
Yeah. It was a factual error in an editorial. So this is, we're talking about something that happened more than 10 years old, and then the court case that happened several years ago, you know, tossed out her defamation complaint. And now she is bringing it back in a different environment where if she succeeds, this could weaken the media's protections and citizens' protections against lawsuits that should not be impeding on free speech.
That historically were protected. I mean, newspapers are protected by court rulings in the 1950s that even if a newspaper makes an error, if they acknowledge the error and correct the error, they cannot be sued, especially if it involves a public figure like the former vice president and former governor of Alaska. And the same trial that exonerated or at least threw out her case by a jury verdict and by a judge's decision is being retried, same judge, same courthouse, same basic witnesses, et cetera, may still have the same outcome. However, the problem is she's not even seeking a monetary award. She is just using it as a cudgel that will then be appealed and appealed by people opposed to freedom of the press, frankly, and get it to the Supreme Court. And we saw what happened to Roe versus Wade after 50 years. Well, Time versus Sullivan could be reversed if we're not careful.
It's hugely concerning. I mean, on the positive side, at least, I'm hopeful that numerous Supreme Courts that from various stages of the last 50 years have affirmed that those decisions in support of the media. But it is a huge risk. This might be the biggest threat to the media right now, to all of us, to our democracy.
The U.S. Supreme Court just a few weeks ago did dismiss what would have been a direct challenge to Times v. Sullivan, a case brought by the former casino magnate Steve Wynn. That was an opportunity for the court to actually hear a case that would have invited it to scale back the protections for the media when it's dealing with public figures. It declined to take that up, and that is a signal that the Supreme Court isn't ready to get rid of Times v. Sullivan. But how long will that last? We know there are at least 2 judges of the Supreme Court, 2 justices who are eager to and have said and written that they're eager to take another swing at Times v. Sullivan. Now, just so that people understand, this means not that if you're in the media, you can get away with flagrantly attacking people, but it does mean that you have some protection from a public figure suing you and harassing you unduly when you make a mistake and accidentally affect someone's reputation, I guess. I think that's a pretty effective way of saying that.
It is. There was no actual malice. And also, when you make the mistake, if any of our listeners have never made a mistake, please write in.
Yeah.
So if you make a mistake, unfortunately, in print, you do your best to correct it and acknowledge that you've made a mistake and move on.
And the law does allow for people who can present facts that they were damaged, in other words, monetarily damaged. You know, it has leeway for that. You know, like a business, if there was a false report in the newspaper, an error that cost them some business, they can litigate that. But when it comes to public figures, the Constitution, as seen by the Supreme Court, protects the media from being sued when they are out there to correct the error that they made.
And never in all my years in journalism, and I was on a national managing editors board, and I met editors all over the country, never was there an instance where someone would cavalierly say, well, we can say whatever we want because we've got the protection.
Oh, absolutely. It was a
from Times versus Sullivan.
It's a cherished protection that we carefully managed.
Let's take a look at one of the topics that you mentioned earlier, that you're getting hit from the left and the right. We have a listener who wrote in quoting the Midas Touch, which is a popular podcast on the left. There are such things now. And here's the quote. Let me read this. This past weekend, Senator Bernie Sanders and AOC spoke before 36,000 people in Los Angeles on Saturday. Then Sanders went to Coachella on Saturday night and spoke on the main stage in front of 125,000 people who all booed Trump. On Sunday, Sanders and AOC spoke in front of 20,000 people in Salt Lake City, Utah, 5,000 in the overflow area. Anyway, the crowds were on their feet chanting, tax the rich, tax the rich. And here's interesting. Remember how corporate news covered every single Trump rally? Do you think they covered Senators Sanders and Congresswoman AOC drawing crowds that were multiple times the size of Trump? Of course not. Our democracy cannot withstand this imbalance. Is it a financial issue or simple cowardice? Well, what do you think about coverage of, let's say, the AOC Sanders Traveling Salvation Show?
I mean, I did see, we ran in the Gazette, we ran a wire story by the Associated Press. It had a photograph, I think it was a picture of AOC walking onto the stage. It was sort of a shot from behind. I can't remember exactly. But, you know, we have tried to, and we do this routinely. I think that sometimes gets lost. There are a lot of perils right now in the media landscape, but by and large, media organizations are still trying to cover these kind of events on both sides, whether it's the left or the right. You know, we talked about this, I know, last week about the hands-off rallies. I think we still are trying to. There's no intentional ignoring by the mainstream media on either side, but there is just that perception of this letter writer that somehow we are in the mainstream media possibly just kowtowing to the Trump administration or pressure from Republicans in Congress. I don't think it's true. I don't think it's accurate. I think it's more of a situation where media outlets, as Mike mentioned earlier, are just struggling in terms of overall ability to cover everything the way we used to cover.
Now, all of those rallies I had read about or heard about, and I heard about it from conventional news coverage, like you did, Miles. It's out there. When readers would call in and say, how come you guys never cover this and never cover that? And I'd say, well, how'd you find out about it? And often they got it right from conventional news media, you know, so it's out there. The problem is that the landscape is cluttered and people are, as you said, Rex, going to Fox and hearing Fox, and they're not hearing the alternate point of view, and people are going to, you know, Midas Touch and hearing a point of view without really getting the full picture sometimes, too. And what you need to do is have media literacy.
Ah, there we go. I love that term. You know, and it is a different era. I think, too, that lumping media together as one misstates the different approaches to coverage. The cable networks, when Donald Trump was a new phenomenon, would cover his speeches back to back. The entire bit, they would go live with it, which network executives acknowledged was a mistake in 2015 and 2016. But he was a new phenomenon. Nobody had seen anything quite like that before. 2016 is not the same as 2025 when we don't have an election, when these are not actually candidates for president at this point, Sanders and the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So it is a different environment, but you can see how people would make an assumption that, gosh, Trump got a lot of coverage in 2016. Why isn't there still a lot of coverage of the other side now?
I get this kind of criticism on a regular basis that either, oh, you're covering the Democratic mayor too much, or you're covering the Republican-led Board of Supervisors too much, et cetera. A lot of times it is just a matter that if that is the administration in power, whether it's a mayor or it's the governor or it's the president, of course, the lion's share or more coverage will be focused around that individual. So I think that is it understandable. Right now, Trump is going to garner a lot more headlines probably in a given week than Bernie Sanders and AOC. But that is not because the media is biased. It's just a fact that who's in office. We covered the heck out of Andrew Cuomo for many, many years, right? And we covered before him, you know, George Pataki, et cetera. Was it because we were biased, or was it because they were making the difference in New Yorkers' lives?
Yeah, the people who often attacked the Times Union as being a tool of the Democrats must not have been reading closely, because our coverage was quite critical of Governor Cuomo, and to the point that I can't tell you the number of phone calls I took from him that were harshly attacking us and, in effect, threatening us in a way that was really not pleasant, I have to say.
And it's persistent criticism that the Times Union gets, and it's just plain wrong.
Yeah.
When, you know, and sometimes you hear people say, oh, the media was complicit in Andrew Cuomo with the whole handling of COVID. And Mike Spain can fill me in, but without Brendan Lyons reporting, along with just a small handful of other reporters, including the New York Times, led largely to his downfall and to his leaving office. Without Brendan Lyons, for example, I don't know if it happens.
Well, it's an interesting observation that the media really does have an impact, and people don't tend to think about that when they see their own particular point of view represented in a way that they would prefer it not.
Very well put.
Yeah, I agree with all of those things. But, you know, in addition, it's really important, whether it's relying on the Associated Press for most papers around the country to cover things, to stay on top of, say, AOC and Bernie Sanders, because one of the questions that citizens wonder is, who's speaking up against this? Does anybody else care but, you know, me, or what's going on? And that's how you learn that there are thousands of people out there who are concerned. Is it going to make the front page of their news outlet? Of course it isn't, because it's not the same as what the president is doing.
Yeah, and the world has changed so much. Poynter, which is a journalism think tank, is doing a series on the 50 moments that shaped journalism over the past half century. And one of them that they're citing, they just cited just recently, was what occurred 27 years ago at the beginning of 1998, when Bill Clinton, let's remember, was in the White House. And here is the interesting event. A Newsweek investigative reporter named Mike Isikoff. Isikoff's a little guy who is just like a perfect Columbo. You know, he's always kind of rumpled. I knew the guy when he was a young reporter. Isikoff had this story about the fact that, gosh, President Clinton had a secret affair with an intern in the White House and all of this thing. Her name was Monica Lewinsky. His editors didn't publish it because, well, Newsweek doesn't publish gossip, they said. This is not the kind of thing that we publish. And then Matt Drudge did, a blogger. Blogs were kind of new in those days. He focused really on political gossip. But the world changed when that happened. And the kind of coverage that Newsweek would have looked down its nose at in those days is now typical. That kind of coverage, I think that the mainstream media learned a lesson from that, and the world has changed, and these small sites now have as much impact as the storied ancient media giants of American history.
Well, that turned out to be a very true story. We all now know about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton. But small websites can put out disinformation or intentionally wrong information, create scenarios that don't even exist, and come up with conspiracy theories. And that begins to take a life of its own. And it really challenges the media for how much credibility they give. If everybody is talking about something and people actually believe that, you know, fluoride is now going to cause brain damage, or that the next thing, whatever it is, it's a very difficult thing to ignore. And then by just coming out and establishing the facts, you have to repeat some of these false and intentionally false many times, and stupidly false in other cases where people are clueless who put them out. It's a challenge. It's a very different landscape, and we owe it all to Matt Drudge.
How hard was Newsweek working at trying to confirm what it has had as a pretty solid rumor? Do you understand that?
Yes, Isikoff will tell you that he had it, that he had it cold, and his editors chose not to publish.
Yeah, and so that's shameful. We didn't used to cover presidents' affairs with women, but this is a different time and a different type of a circumstance when you've got the president sleeping with an intern. It was a story that needed to be told.
That's all we have time for today, so we're going to have to call it at that. We've had Mike Spain, Barbara Lombardo, and Miles Reed, and I'm Rex Smith. We've been guiding your conversation this week. Thanks to our producer, Dave Gustina. Thank you for joining us. Hope to see you again next week on The Media Project.
To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments. She stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, editor and vice president of the Daily Gazette, Miles Reed, and Mike Spain, former associate editor of the Times Union. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Men are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.